mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, everyone holding their breath to see what the stock market will do today. Have you ever noticed that the markets go down when there's good economic news, or investors react positively when the news is bad? Are they really rooting against average Americans, or is there a method to the madness? Also this morning, it's another Mental Health Monday. Some good news in a report from the Trust for America's Health regarding deaths in the U.S. due to alcohol abuse, drugs, and suicide. And happening around town, the Fort Finley Playhouse about to kick off their new season of shows. Members of the cast will join us to preview the season opener, The Red Velvet Cake War. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Monday, August 5th, 2024. So it was a big weekend for Team USA at the Summer Olympic Games in Paris. The United States now well in the lead in the overall medal count with 72 overall medals. 72! The next closest to us would be China with 47 medals, and then host nation France has 44. And we are closing in on the leaderboard for the most gold medals. We have the most overall. We're getting close to leading the pack in the number of gold medals. We have 19 gold. China has 20. So we sit in second place there. And France and Australia are tied for third place in the gold medal count with 12 apiece. So we have 19 gold, 27 silver, and 26 bronze after the weekend of competition as the games continue. The big story, though, out of the Olympics from over the weekend is the track and field events got underway. The French pole vaulter, Anthony Ammirati, I think is how you pronounce his name. He is the latest athlete at the Olympics to go viral, but not for the reason he had hoped. Mr. Ammirati apparently was knocked out of the competition in the pole vault when the, you ready for this? When the bulge in his pants knocked down the pole and thus knocked him out of the finals. In the moment, the commentators struggled for the appropriate words to describe what had just happened. And the whole thing, of course, quickly lit up social media, as you might expect. Although, I would have to say that there are worse ways to get knocked out of the finals. I mean, there are worse ways to, if that's the reason why you didn't qualify, it's not really that bad in the larger scheme of things. You know what I mean? Anyway, it was an unfortunate end to Mr. Ammirati's Olympic dream. No bones about it. Couple of items that are going to be making big news today. There, of course, is Hurricane Debbie, which is expected to make landfall this morning right around the Tampa area in the Florida Big Bend region. It's kind of the armpit of Florida there, just before the panhandle, northern Gulf Coast near the panhandle. And Ohio Task Force 1 is deploying to Florida in preparation of Debbie's landfall. The Urban Search and Rescue Team departed from their Dayton area headquarters at 11 o'clock last night. Meteorologists predicting serious flooding caused by storm surge and extremely heavy rainfall. Ohio Task Force 1, made up of first responders, medical professionals, logistics experts, and other personnel from across the state, they will be staged somewhere along the southern Atlantic coast so that they can move in to help if need be. So Ohio is sending our help to deal with the disaster. So that's kind of cool. And certainly Godspeed and thoughts and prayers for everyone to stay safe as that Category 1 hurricane is expected to make landfall somewhere around Tampa, Tallahassee, somewhere in that area at some point this morning. By the way, speaking of the weather, this was kind of interesting. Now that July is in the books, the climate office at Arizona State University, the climate office at Arizona State University, has determined that the hottest city in the U.S. in the month of July, Needles, California. Needles actually sits on the border between California and Arizona, and it was the hottest city in the U.S. in July with an average temperature of 103.2 degrees between June 30th and July 30th. 103.2 degrees. That's hot. Story goes on to say less than 5,000 permanent residents live in Needles, and that could be why. 103.2 degrees on average in the month of July. Two other cities in California averaged over 100 degrees for the month, Blythe and Palm Springs. So that's pretty warm. That's pretty warm overall. The other big news story is what's going to happen with the stock market today after Friday's disappointing jobs report. There are now renewed fears that we may be coming up on an economic recession. The big R word is back. People are now worried that the Fed didn't lower interest rates fast enough. And overnight, the Nikkei index in Japan tanked, lost nearly 13%. I haven't looked at the numbers, but from what I understand, Dow futures heading into the trading day are down sharply after a big sell-off on Friday after the jobs numbers were out. But before you panic, this I thought was kind of interesting. Ohio's job numbers, not bad, actually. The folks at WalletHub are out with their rankings of the unemployment situation state by state. And of the 50 states and Washington, D.C., Ohio ranks overall 51st in the unemployment situation, which is actually the best in the country. First is where you don't want to be. That's the worst unemployment situation in the country. Ohio is number 51 at the very bottom of the list. Unemployment claims last week 31.27% lower than the previous week and 71% lower than last year. 71% less than a year ago at this time. So overall, Ohio ranks 51st, 49th in unemployment claims week over week, 51st for unemployment claims versus the same week last year, 51st in cumulative unemployment claims versus the same period last year, and 25th, middle of the pack, for unemployment claims per 100,000 people in the labor force. So if the absolute worst that we are doing is middle of the pack and every other metric we're at or very close to the bottom, Ohio actually is sitting pretty good. Now, that's not to say that if we do end up in a recession that, you know, it won't impact us. But as of right now in Ohio, we're not too shabby, as it turns out. A couple of other items among the first things that you need to know. The most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. Ohio State Fair wrapped up over the weekend. Did you get to the fair this year at all? Youth agriculture programs getting more than $130,000 of support following the sale of champions yesterday to wrap up the Ohio State Fair. The sale of champions, bid amounts that exceed exhibitor caps in the livestock auction, go into the Virgil L. Stricker Youth Reserve Program, which benefits 4-H and FFA, plus provides scholarships to students who are pursuing careers in agriculture. The top sale, the sale of champions at the Ohio State Fair yesterday, the Grand Champion Market Beef Steer, exhibited by Aniston Oshust, I think is how you pronounce it, of Tuscarawas County. sold to the Kroger Company, Bob Evans Farms, the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation, and the Ohio Harness Horsemen's Association for $40,000. So congratulations to all of the youth who made out pretty well the Ohio State Fair Sale of Champions yesterday. That is pretty cool. And one final item here among the first things you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. And as Paul Harvey used to be fond of saying, this day's news of most lasting significance may be this. And I would say that this is definitely the most significant news of the day. Scientists are developing an ice cream that won't melt as quickly. Yes, that's right. An ice cream that won't melt as quickly. And it could actually be healthier for you as well. Researchers Dr. Robin Zuluaga, Dr. Robin Zuluaga Gallego, and Jorge Velasquez replaced the fat in ice cream with fibers from banana plants to create a summer treat that stays intact longer. It doesn't melt because banana fibers don't melt. The shelf life of this ice cream was also longer, and the texture was not negatively impacted. Dr. Gallego says this would allow for a more relaxing and enjoyable experience with the food, especially in warm weather. On average, each American eats 23 pounds of ice cream every year, and thanks to this research, it now will not melt as quickly. Hallelujah! That is definitely the best news of the day, no question. I think we found it. There you go, some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Monday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather, partly mostly sunny today with a high around 90, a chance of storms tonight, a low around 70. The Ohio Department of Transportation is letting people know that construction of the new roundabout near US 68 and State Route 15 on the south side of Findlay will begin soon. ODOT's Sherry Newton says the project is needed because Township Roads 49 and 77, which currently provide access to US 68, will be removed as part of the Eagle Creek Floodwater Storage Basin project.
We're excited to be bringing a roundabout to this very busy intersection. Roundabouts are proven. They improve intersection safety and improve congestion. They can handle a lot of traffic efficiently.
ODOT says US 68 and the State Route 15 and US 68 eastbound ramps will close on Monday, August 19th for 75 days. Get more on the project and the story on our website. Bowling Green State University is seeking to recruit and train poll workers amid a national shortage.
The program will place participating students at polls across Northwest Ohio this fall.
Students that are interested in our democracy that, you know, choose to show that interest through voting. I don't know that students always think of this as an option for participation, but it's a really great option.
Program leaders hope students who work the polls this year will continue to do so in other election cycles.
WTOL 11's Kaylee Marente reporting. Flag City Night Out is this week. It's a free, family-friendly event that promotes police-community partnerships and neighborhood camaraderie to make neighborhoods a safer, better place to live. Findlay Police Officer Brian White says they love interacting with youngsters at the event.
Anytime that we as officers get a chance to interact with children at a younger age, it just helps build those bonds and lets them know that we're someone that they can turn to whenever they need help.
Brian says Flag City Night Out allows the public and kids a chance to interact with safety services like police, sheriff, fire, EMS, and others on a one-on-one basis and get a look at the equipment they use. Flag City Night Out is set for Tuesday night from 6 to 9 at Riverside Park off of Carnahan Avenue. Remember, you can always get more news online anytime at WFIN.com.
Notice that sometimes it seems like investors are happy when we get reports of bad economic news, or conversely, when the news is what most people would consider to be positive, and yet the markets go down. Are the sharks on Wall Street really rooting against average folks? Bankrate senior economic analyst Mark Hamrick is with us this morning to explain why it can perhaps seem like that. And honestly, Mark, I think this is sometimes why traders have a bad reputation in the minds of some people, because it does seem as though they are happy when things are bad.
Well, I don't think that is true on the face of it, but I agree that that perception can exist. In other words, I think it's a good question to ask. So I appreciate the opportunity to try to weigh in. This is sometimes characterized, Chris, as the potential conflict between so-called Wall Street and Main Street.
Yeah.
Wall Street being, you know, sort of analogous to financial markets. But the reality is it's more complicated than that, because people who are betting in financial markets, making investment decisions, are doing so in a more nuanced fashion that ultimately involves things like the outlook for inflation, the outlook for changes in interest rates or monetary policy more broadly, as determined by the Federal Reserve. And so I can give you an example about that. And then we can also talk about the notion of something that goes on with particularly stocks, and that is a phrase that has been around for a long time, which is buy the rumor, sell the news. So why is it that an investor might react in a way that involves selling stocks on a day if they get better than expected economic news?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we can think about this in the current environment where we've been through the worst inflation in a generation. We've all experienced that. And what happens when inflation is high in at least the United States? Our central bank raises interest rates. It took them a while this time, going back to 2022, but eventually they got around to it.
Yeah.
And we had the steepest tightening cycle in a generation. Higher interest rates are aimed at slowing the economy and make it more difficult to generate profits. And that feeds into the notion of stock prices or valuation. So strong economic news can result in higher interest rates. Higher interest rates are only something that savers would rejoice over, and typically result in higher borrowing costs and a slower economy. There is something that goes on in the stock market also about speculation. In other words, we're going to make a bet that, let's say, this company is going to do well in the next 3 months, 6 months, 20 years. And in leading up to an event or an earnings report, let's just use, for example, something that's timely, Apple reporting results. And Apple, you know, is a company that is valued at roughly $1 trillion in the stock market. There's a lot of money riding on the performance of Apple.
Mm-hmm.
And so investors will want to get ahead of an earnings report thinking that, whoa, well, you know, Apple's a good company, has smart management, has products that people love. We think, in other words, I'm saying this is a prospective thought on the part of an investor. Perhaps they're going to do better than expected with their earnings, with Wall Street having set expectations at a certain level. And when they do come through, and let's just say, hypothetically speaking, if they were to report better than expected, well, you know, that was the result you expected. And then some investors who are traders, as you say, are only in it for the short term. And so the stock goes up and perhaps they sell, and they made their money. So, you know, a lot of this is short-term thinking, not necessarily long-term.
Mm-hmm.
And I would bring it back around to one thing that we talk about very often, a Bankrate, and that is most of us who are exposed to the stock market are exposed to the market because we're saving for retirement. And that equates to a long-term strategy. Most of us are not able to time the market very well.
And right.
Those who do, well, that's a different story.
So there is a method to the madness. Some of the examples that you use, are those always true? Are there certain exceptions? Are there certain situations where what you might expect would happen doesn't happen for one reason or another?
Well, it varies over time, given the conditions that we're experiencing or where we are in the economic cycle. You can think back to when the economy was truly troubled in the sense of perhaps being in a recession or being feared of being in one or mm-hmm. trying to sort of emerge from one. And good economic news in that situation would certainly be welcomed. But when you're in a situation where, you know, things are looking inflationary and you'd be concerned that the Fed would continue to sort of hit the brakes, well, then stronger than expected economic news doesn't go over so well, even though many stakeholders might be quite happy to see a stronger than expected job market, and that includes the people who got hired.
Yeah. So it's really, as you were saying, it's really about looking at the big picture, thinking long term instead of focusing on the here and now. In most cases, what might be good in the moment or what might seem good in the moment might spell trouble down the road, using history as a guide. Is that kind of it?
Well, if you're a trader, you might have a different perspective if you're just trying to make money in an hour or a day.
Right.
To use an extreme example. Most of us, as I say, and I think, you know, we're all pretty familiar with this, are thinking about the long term. If we're thinking about retiring as a young person 40 years from now, for someone who's more senior, you know, perhaps 5 or 10 years from now, or even a couple of years from now, that is a much different investment time horizon, as the phrase goes, than somebody who's really just sort of in it for the killing that might occur, if they're lucky enough, in the next hour or two.
Yeah. Are there situations that are always positive or always negative, or is it always a matter of context? Like, for example, is there ever a time when, say, strong consumer confidence, when a strong consumer confidence report would be viewed as a bad sign?
Well, I would say, you know, there is what we're sort of cheering for as the collective culture in society or nation or community, and then there is what has implications with respect to investing. And so, you know, I would say, you know, to answer your question sort of from the humanity standpoint, of course, we always want to have strong consumer confidence.
Yeah.
But if consumers are spending wildly, as has been the case at some times in our history, and if the economy is seen as getting sort of red hot, as it might have been the case when the Federal Reserve was either beginning to tighten interest rates or on the verge of it, then that's where that has negative implications. Certainly, if you're a corporation reliant on retail sales, you know, you want all the consumer confidence out there that you can get, amid the hope that you can also compete, you know, very well against your rivals in the corporate space.
I've heard it described as trying to seek out that perfect balance in the economy, where, again, it's not overheated, but, it's not in moving toward a recession, and finding that balance. Does that perfect balance in the economy ever really exist? I mean, what would that look like?
I would say we probably experienced a good amount of it, relatively speaking, over the course of the last 15 years emerging from the great financial crisis, when the unemployment rate has not been elevated and when inflation has been at 2% or around that level. Mm-hmm. Of course, over the last few years, we've experienced a sharp run-up in the consumer price index, equating to about a 20% reduction in buying power. And that's why consumer sentiment, for among other reasons of late, has been, frankly, pretty lousy. But at the same time, the job market has been seen as historically strong, with the unemployment rate either below 4% or recently just tiptoeing above it at 4.1%. I think to the very crux of your question, the reality is that the economy is never in perfect balance, and financial markets are always moving through a journey that's looking at some other kind of a destination. That's why all these asset prices are constantly changing, right? They're never stagnant.
Yeah.
And so the economy, the good news for the U.S. economy is it's incredibly dynamic. It's amazingly innovative. And one of the dynamics that has, you know, come to the fore in the last 20, 40, 50 years is we're also globally interconnected, reliant on international trade.
I guess that's why, as you were mentioning, they say it's so difficult to time the market, and probably why analysts such as yourself have a job. If it was easy, then anyone could do it.
Well, from your lips to God's ears. But what I would say is that's also why enterprises like Bankrate, you know, put out what we believe and people tell us is trusted content, is because, you know, this kind of information is quite accessible. And I think that's one of the great things about the evolution and innovation of the U.S. financial markets in recent years, is the so-called democratization of markets.
Yeah.
We can think back a number of years ago where if you wanted to buy a single stock, you'd have a commission of maybe $50. And now you can find enterprises that actually provide commission-free trading, or in other words, access to buying something like that at a very low or no cost. So, you know, we hope that everybody can succeed with their financial goals. And I think through, focus and diligence, that's absolutely possible.
Again, Bankrate senior economic analyst Mark Hamrick with us this morning to talk about why the markets sometimes move in ways that we don't expect. And indeed, there is, as we said, a method to the madness, as it were. Mark, thanks very much for taking the time. Always appreciate your insight, sir.
It's my pleasure. Good questions. I appreciate the opportunity, Chris. Thank you.
Well, a new report, the Pain in the Nation 2024 report, just released by the Trust for America's Health, provides some good news. Deaths due to alcohol, drugs, and suicide are down, albeit slightly, but down after several years of growth. And joining us this morning is Dr. Nadine Grossia. She is President and CEO of TIFA. As we said, good news, or at least encouraging news. Share some of the key findings here from this report.
Yes, thank you. And as you said, some encouraging, some positive signs in that the data are showing that there is indeed a slight reduction in deaths due to alcohol, drugs, and suicide. We saw a 6% decrease in alcohol-induced deaths. And the deaths due to drug overdose and suicide deaths were stable. They were unchanged from the previous year. And that's really reflecting the significant and hard work from community, states, the federal efforts to address this mental health and addiction crisis and increase availability and to access to services. But it's also important, what we also see in the data, to remember that over the past two decades, we've actually seen deaths due to alcohol, drugs, and suicide increase really at an alarming rate, up by 142% since 2002. So that really means in this most recent data, over 207,000 people have died due to alcohol, drugs, and suicide. So much more work to be done because lives are being lost. Families and friends are losing their loved ones. So much more that needs to be done.
Yeah, certainly that is the case. Far too many. But as we said, given that alarming growth that we have seen, even leveling out is something to be encouraged by. You break it down also state by state with respect to these deaths from alcohol, drugs, and suicide, and by demographics, age, race, gender. Kind of share some of those figures with us, particularly with respect to the Ohio numbers for us here in the Buckeye State.
Yes. So looking at the state of Ohio, when we look at deaths due to alcohol, drugs, and suicide, about over 8,600 individuals who died due to alcohol, drugs, and suicide. And that represents about a 4% decrease in terms of deaths from the previous year. So again, encouraging news. We saw decreases in alcohol deaths of about 4%, decreases in drug overdose deaths of 5%. Where we did see an increase is in suicide deaths. It increased by 2%. So important points in time to be able to look at trends and opportunities of how we continue to make progress. When we think about this really across populations and groups, we know that the crisis of substance misuse and suicide is really occurring across communities and populations all over the country. There are, populations and groups that are disproportionately affected. When we look, for example, at drug overdose rates, we see rates are highest among males, among Black individuals, among American Indian, Alaska Native individuals, as well as people who are in their ages 35 to 54. When we look at alcohol-related deaths, we see that in the age group of adults about ages 55 to 74 having the highest rates, as well as American Indian, Alaska Native people. And then for suicide deaths, those are highest among people living in rural areas, also males, and then American Indian, Alaska Native people. And it's important to, when we think about these data, understand, some of the drivers of these disproportionate impacts. When we think about how this is really a broad scale public health crisis, that many people are experiencing mental health problems. There's certainly an epidemic of loneliness, as we are seeing financial and economic hardships that exist in individuals and families, and these feelings of hopelessness. And so what we need to do is really continue to invest in these proven programs and policies that will be able to help address what has been a longstanding mental health and addiction crisis in our country.
Yeah, it's interesting. Particularly, you mentioned suicide in rural areas, and we were just talking about that here not all that long ago on the program. So that really is interesting in particular. And as you said, you make some recommendations here with the goal of making this a long-term sustainable trend, because the question is this beginning of a positive sustainable trend, or is this an anomaly? With respect to policies, programs, practices to prevent substance misuse and drug overdoses, what are some of the keys here with respect to that?
Yes, absolutely. You know, as you just said, we want to continue to sustain progress. And what's really needed is investing in those proven programs and policies and really having solutions that are matching kind of the size and the scope of the crisis. So I'll cover three areas. One is increasing investment in prevention programs and bolstering kind of the community conditions, the economic conditions, for example, that promote good health. So that's an example is increasing funding for substance use prevention programs and mental health programs, as well as mental health services in schools, so that we can reach students and young people. It's also supporting the types of harm reduction programs that actually can save lives. And so as an example, having readily available access to naloxone, which is life-saving medicine that can reverse an opioid overdose, ensuring that that has broad availability in the community. And then also strengthening our mental health and substance use prevention systems. So ensuring, for example, that there's sustained funding for crisis intervention programs like the 988 Suicide and Crisis Lifeline that was launched 2 years ago. You know, since that launch 2 years ago, counselors have actually answered more than 10 million calls, chats, and texts, just demonstrating the magnitude of need for this type of service for anyone who's having any types of mental health challenges, feelings of sadness, and even thoughts of suicide. Mm-hmm. And we need to really also ensure that we're providing access to treatment and services for anyone who needs them, ensuring that they have access to healthcare. We have far too many people who live in areas that have mental health care shortage areas. In the state of Ohio, for example, 73% of the state's residents actually live in mental health care shortage areas. So bolstering the workforce and access to care is also critically important.
I think I already know the answer to this, but I'll ask anyway. When you're talking about these recommendations, are you speaking to health officials and public leaders at the local, state, or national level?
So we're certainly directing, you know, one, that the actions can be taken at all levels. We have specific recommendations that Congress should be taking in terms of increasing the funding for the programs and policies that I've just mentioned around increasing in investments in prevention and harm reduction and our mental health and substance use prevention systems. And certainly, yes, states and localities can also be taking these types of actions of assuring, you know, are there opportunities to make sure that there's access and availability of naloxone, for example, as a life-saving medication, assuring that people are there's outreach and education done in communities to be able to educate individuals and families about the risks and how to prevent drug use and be able to also destigmatize mental health. So these are actions that policymakers can be taking at all levels, at the federal, state, and local levels, because this is truly a broad-scale public health crisis that needs to be addressed.
And it's such a good point. It puts it perfectly. It's something that is broad scale and impacts us at every level. So the solutions have to come from every level as well. Joining us once again, Dr. Nadine Gracia. She is the president CEO of the Trust for America's Health. Their new report, Pain in the Nation 2024, is out now. And folks can find that on your website, I'm assuming.
Yes, they can visit our website at Trust for America's Health, which is TFAH.org. That's TFAH.org.
We will link that up on our webpage as well. Dr. Gracia, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for the opportunity. Take care.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
Dateline Savannah, Georgia, where Joshua McGregor has pleaded guilty to to setting fire to a dumpster at the McDonald's restaurant that he worked in order to get customers out of the restaurant at closing time. Back in April of last year, the now former employee apparently became frustrated because it was closing time. There were too many people in the restaurant. He needed to get them out. And so he lit a piece of cardboard on fire and threw it into the dumpster filled with flammable materials. while it did the trick, he learned that it was also illegal. The fire, of course, caused the restaurant to briefly close. But the assistant special agent for the, and this is federal charges, the special agent, Bo Kaladka, says arson is an extremely violent crime that not only destroys property, but also places firefighters, first responders, and the general public at great risk. By the way, Mr. McGregor probably didn't help his case, but the fact that he filmed the whole thing on his cell phone. It was just too busy. It's closing time, people. Get out. You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. Mr. McGregor has been sentenced to 5 years in prison, where he won't have to worry about too many people at his restaurant anymore. Let's see. What else is going on? Speaking of restaurants, this is from the file of sounded like a good idea at the time. Two chefs in China have been sentenced to prison for putting anti-diarrheal medication in expired food and serving the food to customers. See, the food was expired, but you don't want to throw it out. You don't want to waste food and have to buy new food. So they decided that, what happens when you eat expired food? You get diarrhea, so they put anti-diarrheal medicine in the food, and they figured, well, that'll fix it. The medicine to prevent diners from becoming sick from the food that they were eating, the expired food. The Market Management Bureau of the Shangzhou District in China sentenced the men to pay $22,000 in fines. And also, they have been sentenced to an indeterminate term in prison. A police investigation found that the chefs served at least 1,600 servings of food laced with the medication. And that were actually expired. Seemed like a good idea at the time. If expired food gives you diarrhea, we'll just put the anti-diarrheal in there and serve it up anyway. Everything should be fine. Nope. Let's see. In Florida, this is from Cape Coral, Florida, Cade Logan is under arrest for one of the most unusual thefts you will ever hear about. And we have some unusual thefts. We have a history of very unusual thefts in the broken news, but this one is quite unusual. Mr. Logan was arrested for allegedly attempting to steal a decorative turtle from someone else's lawn. A decorative turtle he was stealing from someone's lawn. The homeowners told police they heard strange noises around their pool. And security video footage appears to show the suspect taking a large decoration shaped like a sea turtle. The piece was returned to its owners, and Mr. Logan was charged with a count of burglary and a count of petty theft. The motive remains unknown. Was he trying to set it free and then realized it was just a statue? Was just, I don't know. Stole a decorative turtle. Can you imagine going to jail for that? You get locked up and your cellmate says, what are you in for? I stole a decorative turtle. Now this, back to Georgia. This is from Douglas County, Georgia. All kinds of weird. Devin Davis, age 35, has been charged with battery for allegedly licking the hair of an 18-year-old girl at the Arbor Place Mall. Licking the hair of an 18-year-old girl. According to local news reports, Mr. Davis, who is also charged with willful obstruction of law enforcement officers, is already out on bail, or is out on bail now, under the condition that he doesn't return to the mall or approach the alleged victim. So he's been given a restraining order. I'm thinking this is, I mean, malls are already, you know, having a tough time economically. And this is probably not going to help. This is probably not going to help bring people out to the mall, I wouldn't think. This is, they're already having trouble. This is not going to be helpful. And finally, in the broken news this morning, this is a really sweet story. A woman in Ocean City, New Jersey, found a bottle with a message inside while walking along the shore there in Ocean City. She's walking along the beach and discovers a message in the bottle. This one, as it turns out, might just set a world record for the oldest message in a bottle ever recovered. The antiquated green corked bottle was found last month by Amy Smythe Murphy, and was inscribed with the words Bar and Brother Philadelphia. That's what it said on the bottle, Bar and Brother Philadelphia. As it turns out, that business was back from the mid-19th century. And so immediately there was some curiosity about what was inside this bottle. Inside the bottle were several items, including a business card belonging to William and John Clem, two brothers who ran a furnishing goods company in Philadelphia that went out of business in 1881. So you know it had to have been placed in the water before that, right? Or at least sealed in the bottle before that. And then there was also a note in the bottle referencing a late 19th century Atlantic City yacht called the Neptune. Ms. Smythe Murphy says she has applied to have the bottle vetted by the Guinness Book of World Records. It is believed the bottle may have been dislodged from the ocean floor by a recent beach replenishment operation. But how it ended up on the floor of the beach, or the floor of the ocean, who knows? Was it in a shipwreck, or was it thrown off the side intentionally? Did it get washed out to sea somehow over the years? Who knows? But the belief is it could be the oldest message in a bottle ever recovered. And that is just all kinds of cool. Wowee. There you go. That is today's Broken News Report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
WFIN has the opening tune-up for the Findlay Trojans on Saturday as they scrimmage Toledo St. Francis. This is Tim Montgomery, and WFIN will bring you the action live from Donnell Stadium at 10 a.m. Then get set for another exciting season of Trojan football with the opener on Friday, August 23rd at Toledo Central Catholic. The Trojans play here on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. So Kamala Harris is now officially the Democratic nominee for president. She has secured enough delegate votes in the online delegate voting, or the virtual voting that is taking place. It actually concludes today, the vote does, but she's already wrapped up enough delegate votes that she has it all sewn up. So this all, of course, happening ahead of the official Democratic National Convention. So the only question left is, who will her running mate be? And apparently we will learn this within the next 24 to 36 hours at the most, because the new nominee has announced that she and her running mate will launch a seven-state barnstorming tour beginning tomorrow in Philadelphia. So we got to find out who it'll be very soon. In a new survey of 1,000 adults, 400 Republicans, 400 Democrats, and 200 people who either are independent or identify with a third party, 26% believe that Joe Biden should have dropped out of the race sooner. 34% say he shouldn't have sought a second term to begin with. 55% of respondents believe that Donald Trump's age is now an issue, which is kind of interesting. But what I immediately caught my eye on this, with all of the crazy twists and turns this election has taken, when it comes to predicting the outcome of the election, which is what I really thought was interesting about this latest survey, again, 400 Republicans, 400 Democrats, 200 independents or third party folks. So evenly split, pretty much. When it comes to predicting the election, 38% in this survey believe that Kamala Harris will win in November. 39% believe that there is not anyone who can beat Donald Trump at this point. So make of that what you will. So, happening around town, we have some members of the cast with us in the studio this morning for a preview of the upcoming Fort Findlay Playhouse production of The Red Velvet Cake War. Samantha Henry has been with us numerous times on the program, so good to see you again.
Thank you very much.
And Nikki Needles is with us, which, by the way, can I just say, that is like the greatest stage name ever.
Thank you.
Nikki Needles. That's perfect. So tell us a little bit about the Red Velvet Cake War. Kind of set the synopsis of this show for us.
So the Red Velvet Cake Wars is about a family. It's the whole entire show kind of circles around this family. But every year they have a family reunion, and the mean kind of antagonist of the show tries to cancel the family reunion. So the cousins all get together and decide, we're not going to let her cancel the reunion. So we are going to try to throw the reunion ourselves. And Nikki and I's cousin, Gay Now, is going to host the reunion, but she is going through a messy divorce. So she is a little distraught in her own way. So she makes a bet with our aunt that is trying to cancel the reunion that she can make a better red velvet cake than our aunt, who is well known for her red velvet cake. So the antics happen when Gay Nail is trying to come up with the best recipe and all of that sort of thing. But it's a very funny show. It's very silly. You're not going to walk away with it a big life meeting or anything like that, but you will laugh a lot.
Does it seem like dysfunctional families are at the heart of an awful lot of great shows like this?
Absolutely. You know? It's incredibly relatable.
On some level, I think for all of us, you know, we can relate to this. So what makes this so much fun? Is it that relatability that makes it so much fun to perform? I mean, you know, we talk about it's a fun show to see and all of that. Is it as much fun to put on when it's like that?
Oh, it absolutely is. And it's actually kind of funny because Sam and I were backstage a couple nights ago talking about our characters and realized that there are many aspects of our characters that are very much us anyway. So
it makes it easy to bring the characters to life.
For sure.
Again, because you can relate to.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Nikki's character, there is a couple of scenes actually where she is talking about killing people and ways to get rid of the body and all these like very harebrained schemes. And
I'm glad I'm on this side of the desk. Yeah. I'm just going to.
I walked backstage that night and I was like, you kind of are Jimmy Y, which is kind of scary, but I'm glad that we're friends. So you don't want to kill me and pour acid on me and all these other things.
Well, I don't want to say that there is any typecasting going on here, but. You know, we'll just tickets go on sale for this today to the general public, right?
Yes.
Give us all of the details on the show.
The easiest way to get tickets is going to be from our website, fortfindlayplayhouse.org. There aren't any additional fees or anything like that, so you're paying the same $15 online as you would if you came to the door and purchased tickets. There are some phone hours listed on our website as well where someone can call in and purchase tickets over the phone if you are more comfortable doing that. But definitely the easiest way is going to be to head to our website to pick those up.
And again, those go on sale today. And when does the show open?
August 15th.
Okay.
And then other new thing this year is typically in the past, our Sunday shows have been at 5 p.m. Our Sunday shows starting this season will be at 3 p.m.
Okay. So a little bit earlier for the Sunday shows. As we mentioned, it is the first show of the new season. And I'm looking here at some of the titles. It's really going to be a terrific season this year. You excited?
Yes, very excited for this season. There's a lot of great shows, a lot of shows people are going to be familiar with, which also makes it fun.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be a great season.
You know, we've talked about that in the past as well. You know, one of the things, like, for example, the Red Velvet Cake War, maybe not the best known play immediately.
Right.
The Odd Couple is the next show. And Samantha, you're actually directing on that.
I am, right? Yes.
That one much better known. But does that present some challenges because people have, you know, some kind of expectation going in?
I think there are challenges in both directions. I think it's exciting for us to do a new show that we've never done before. And sometimes I think our audience enjoys seeing something they've never seen. But I actually got to be involved in The Odd Couple the last time that it was performed at the Playhouse. It was like 14 years ago, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And it was one of my favorite shows that I've been involved with. And I did the set dressing for it. So I was not on stage for it. But the challenge with that is we have actors that were in it last time that probably will want to audition for it again this time. So myself, having seen it the last time, and being the director for it, I have kind of have a picture in my head, but I am used to working with new actors and I like seeing different people on stage and that kind of thing. So challenges because you have this picture of in your mind of what it's supposed to be like, but also it's exciting to see a new generation of people at the Playhouse and what stamp they'll put on the show.
Interpretation and, mm-hmm. and all of that. Following The Odd Couple, James and the Giant Peach, mm-hmm. which again is one that folks are familiar with. And then a couple of others. Perfect Crime is coming, after the first of the year, right?
Yes, that's actually the longest running play in New York City. It's still running today.
Interesting.
The same woman has been playing the lead in that show since it opened. So it's definitely a thriller. And the director for that, J.R. Smith, is great with those titles. So I'm excited for that one.
And that's not a musical.
It is not.
You know, and because a lot of times we say, oh, it's, you know, longest running in New York. So you think immediately Broadway musical, but it's not that. You do have 9 to 5, the musical, to wrap up the season. So that's going to be a lot of fun.
Yes. Very recognizable title. And again, a lot of opportunity for people to be on stage and huge cast and that sort of thing. So that one will be super fun too.
Which brings up the point that you're always looking for new people to join the fun, the Fort Finley Playhouse, both on stage and behind the scenes.
Yes. Always looking for volunteers, no matter how much time you're willing to donate, whether it is on stage or off stage, we're always looking for new folks to add to our family for sure.
So the Red Velvet Cake War is the first show of the new season. Again, tickets go on sale today, and opening night is August the 15th. Look forward to it. We've got a link on our webpage for more information about all of the shows this season, including the opener. And Samantha Henry, Nikki Needles, thanks very much for dropping by. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. Again, all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. And remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage. And that, of course, goodmornings.net. You can also connect with us on social media, sign up for our daily email newsletter, and more. Again, goodmornings.net is our little corner of the World Wide Web. We invite you to visit us online. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.